Hi, everybody. Program note, as we've been telling you, we're posting the show every day now. So many of you said you liked it, so guess what? Used to be a weekly, now we're a daily, hold no punches, so look for it. Truth Bomb, number one. There's a painful irony in what Denmark and Belgium and Britain and Germany, the Netherlands and Norway are now doing. Truth Bomb number two. Those countries want to make sure underwater pipelines are not blown up. Truth Bomb number three. Two of those countries should know a lot about blowing up pipelines. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Okay, so this is one of those stories that makes you kind of want to shake your head and wonder, are they stupid? Are they really that stupid? Or maybe they just think we're that stupid. So here's what's new. Six countries, and we're going to show you where they are on a map. These countries, Denmark, Belgium, Britain, Germany, the Netherlands, and Norway. Norway is important in this case. So is Germany, by the way. But let me continue. Those countries have decided to come together to build a security alliance. What is the purpose of this international security consortium? To protect what connects them under the North Sea. Pipelines. There are obviously pipelines that travel at the bottom of the North Sea, right? Well, okay, that seems like a good idea, right? Make sure that those pipelines are safeguarded. But when we get into the why, right? Why are they doing this? That's when this good idea seems both curious and hypocritical. So let's start with why they are doing this. The reason is this.
Tonight, sabotage at sea. That's what President Biden is calling the leaks and explosions on the Nord Stream pipelines.
Biden announced it. Interesting. Remember that as we go through this story. So, yes, on September 26, 2022, three huge explosions erupted along the underwater Nord Stream pipeline, sending an estimated 300,000 tons of hazardous methane gas pouring into the Baltic Sea. The pipeline belongs to Russia, which is used to transport natural gas to other European countries. It was a devastating act of sabotage, targeting the Russian economy, and more specifically, the Russian energy industry. Somebody who wanted to hurt Russia obviously did this. So who did it? Who did this? Apparently, the U.S. and other Western countries blamed, I swear you can't make this stuff up. Do you know who they blamed? Russia. They blamed Russia. And that is the absolutely ridiculous story that the CNNs of the world ran with. Because here, and let me just say it as a person who used to work at CNN, that's what the U.S. State Department told them to say. We think it was Russia. Okay, they say it was Russia, and that's what they report. It's nuts. But along comes Seymour Hersh, one of the most respected reporters in the world, former New York Times reporter who was fired by them because he was very honest about stories, considered one of the best in the business. And he uncovers who really blew up the Nord Stream pipelines. And it certainly wasn't Russia, right? He finds, according to his sources, that it was an act of sabotage, coordinated by, according to his reporting, President Joe Biden, along with the CIA chief, as well as the State Department head, Anthony Blinken, and the Undersecretary, Victoria Nuland, all of whom have a historical hatred for Russia and Nord Stream. Imagine all of those people in a room coming up with some kind of plan about what we're going to do with Nord Stream, right? So in this meeting to try and figure out what they can do about Nord Stream, according to Hersh, in his article, they come up with a way to secretly blow up the pipeline using specially trained divers from that Navy diving school in Panama City, Florida. So immediately, we read the article. I read the article, and we got on the phone with Seymour Hersh and we said, "Would you mind coming on and taking us through the story?" Here's Mr. Hersh.
The United States knows who did it. They know the president did it. You could, another way of asking this question that no reporter is asking a press conference: that we blew up the pipeline and Biden's okay. a group of CIA officers and other agencies were put together, and early this year, last year, about a year ago at this time.
There is something else that Hirsch uncovers that makes this new story regarding the security arrangement between Denmark, Belgium, Britain, the Netherlands, and Germany so peculiar. You know which country, according to Hirsch, helped pull off the sabotage? The explosion of these Russian pipelines? Obviously, U.S. divers, the U.S. military, the CIA, but which other country had to know because they needed their cooperation to do it, physically do it? According to Hirsch, Norway. That's right, Norway. The country that more and more is becoming a giant U.S. military installation with extremely close ties to Washington and who has its own energy industry and pipelines who compete with Russia's Nord Stream project. Oh, and guess who Norway shares a border with? Russia. By the way, according to Hirsch, both Norway and Germany were on the pipeline, were in on the plan to destroy the pipeline. I want to talk to you about two things, Norway and Germany. Why would, if Germany's chancellor went along with this, Mr. Scholz, why would he do that given what we know about how this has hurt the German people? I don't get that.
They've always been worried about the fact Russia has enormous deposits of natural gas and oil, tons of it.
Yeah.
And the Russians have been selling gas, particularly methane gas, clean gas, that can heat businesses and homes to Germany for decades, since the 60s.
So it's all about the business and the relationship. So Norway, who according to Hirsch may have helped blow up a pipeline, is now joining forces with five other countries to help them figure out how to protect their pipelines. They would know, right? But doesn't that seem hypocritical? And why not invite, by the way, Russia in this consortium, if not as a group in the group, at least to ask for their opinions? After all, they were the victims of a pipeline explosion. No, in fact, Russia's not even mentioned in their report that I have been reading since they put this out yesterday. And as far as the attack on their pipelines go, well, every single one of these North Sea border alliance countries, or whatever the heck it's called, have taken the position that this explosion, it was simply an unsolved mystery. Nobody knows what happened. Maybe the pipelines just blew themselves up. Maybe it was a whale or a big giant shark that bit it. Who knows? And what about the country that, according to Hirsch, actually sabotaged the pipeline? The one whose president actually said he would, in fact, do it? Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but there's actually tape of President Biden bragging about his plans to destroy the Nord Stream pipeline. Here it is.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
Yeah, wink, I promise you, we'll be able to do it. We'll be able to get rid of the Nord Stream pipeline. And then when the Nord Stream pipeline explodes, Mr. Biden, his office, the State Department, CIA, all go, can't imagine who did it. Probably Russia, right? Once again, the first question I asked when we started this story was what? Are they that stupid, or do they think we're that stupid? Actually, the U.S. is an unofficial part of this security consortium that we've been telling you about with all these countries. Why? Well, because the alliance is a part of NATO. And guess who is the kind of unofficial head of NATO? The U.S. Sometimes you just can't make this stuff up, folks. Joining me now to talk about it is George Smuelli. He's a senior research fellow at Global Policy Institute and the author of the book Bombs for Peace, NATO's Humanitarian War on Yugoslavia. And once again, here we are talking about bombs and talking about NATO. What do you make of this? Can you find some fault in my premise, in the questions that I asked and what I just postulated? Am I wrong?
There is no fault in your premise. I mean, you highlighted that moment in early February 2022 when President Biden, he's standing there next to Chancellor Scholz in D.C., and he says quite clearly what the United States is going to do. And then lo and behold, it does it. The moment it happens, we have the current Polish foreign minister, Radek Sikorski, he wasn't foreign minister at the time, sending out an exultant tweet saying, thank you, United States. He later withdrew that tweet. And then you had Victoria Nuland telling Senator, Senator Cruz, I'm sure, Senator, like me, you're delighted that the Nord Stream pipelines are just a bunch of rusting metal at the bottom of the sea. And then you had Secretary of State Blinken saying, hey, well, this is great. This is an exciting opportunity for Europe to diversify its energy sources. So you've got the culprits who are pretty much making no secret that they did it. It's only the sort of the very dim bulbs of the media that for a while went to the story that, I think Russia did it because Russia wanted to destroy its own pipelines. It's just like every time there's a terrorist attack in Russia, it's always Russia that's responsible. For some reason, they always want to hurt themselves. It's uncanny kind of people.
You got to have big intestinal fortitude to do and say these things with knowing there will be no impunity. I mean, the president of the United States says, I'm going to do something. It happens. And then he says, oh, my God, look, somebody did this. It wasn't me. And nobody asks him. And when Seymour Hersh, who, as you saw, I had here on the show exactly where you are right now, and I had a conversation with him, at the time, one of the things that we talked about that I didn't include was that he was being attacked, assailed by the media for daring to suggest that perhaps the United States and the West would be involved with blowing up this pipeline, which obviously was either blown up by Russia or it just happened by itself, or, as I suggested, a large shark.
You're absolutely right, because he was attacked ferociously as a conspiracy theorist. That's a conspiracy theory, as opposed to when you're claiming it was Russia that did it. That's not a conspiracy theory, that they did it to themselves. And then, of course, in response to Hersh's story, then the German media and then the American and the British media in tow came up with this alternative, ridiculous story about some independent freelance Ukrainians were involved. Nobody knows who they were. They had absolutely nothing to do with Zelensky. And rest assured, it was entirely a freelance operation. There was a hot babe involved with a bikini. You know, she was part of the project. But the amazing thing is they never came up with a name, just one name or one address, somebody that, you know, as to the story. And the media went with this ridiculous nonsense for a while. But now it's all been completely forgotten. I mean, that whole story about the intrepid freelancers who did this amazing thing, going deep, deep underwater, the freezing cold water, with these heavy bombs, and blew it up. But this amazing phenomenon, and it's all been forgotten. But apparently that wasn't a conspiracy theory.
You know, it's interesting now, though, that they're creating this consortium. And by the way, as I think I stated, I don't know if I made this as clearly as I wanted to, that's a good idea. They should have a security consortium where countries come together to protect something as important as this. I mean, there should have been a security consortium between Russia and Germany and Norway and Sweden and whatever other countries. I don't know my maps well enough or my geography well enough to tell you all the countries that surround the Baltic Sea. But all the countries around the Baltic Sea should have a pipeline consortium to protect it, and they should put their navies together and work to do that. I think back now to why doesn't that exist? Is it because if we did that, then we'd have to team up with Russia, and we're not willing to do that?
Well, it could well be, because obviously, as you said in your intro, Russia is the primary victim in all of this. It was a Russian-built pipeline that was destroyed, and yet within a week or so of this destruction, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg started talking about, you know, our energy infrastructure is very vulnerable. We have to do something about it. You know, it's a vulnerable infrastructure, and not, you know, accepting the obvious fact that it's Russia's energy infrastructure that has been destroyed. And what is also amazing is that even in this announcement, no one is asking the obvious question. I mean, you always ask, well, who did it? There's a terrible crime that's been committed. It's the worst act of industrial sabotage ever. And yet there's a complete lack of curiosity as to who did it, who committed the murder. And that's it. And so we had these investigations. We had Sweden investigate. And then they said, oh, it turns out we don't actually have any jurisdiction, so we're just going to close down the investigation. So after all these months, they suddenly figured, oh, we don't have jurisdiction. And then Denmark, they closed it down. They said, we're just not getting anywhere with this. But the interesting thing is that Denmark didn't at least say, well, you've been working on this for a few months. How about publishing a report? You know, what have you found? I mean, you know, you spent, I don't know, 8-9 months on it. You must have found something. But we never had a report. And I guess Germans are now investigating, you know, burrowing away. And I guess at some point they're going to announce.
Yeah, right. Sure they are. Sure they are. Yeah. Sure they are, George. Yeah. Uh-huh. Wink. Yeah. It's any day now. In fact, I think maybe sometime tomorrow we might be right. Listen, you've written about, and you're an expert on NATO. When we come back, I want to push you a little bit to share with us information about how NATO, the United States, and other Western countries can get away with these narratives that they're so good at creating that seem to go unchallenged. George Samuel, when we come back, talking about that very thing right here. Stay with us, because we've got a lot more to ask about this curious, curious situation.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Decades after gaining independence from France, Côte d'Ivoire, formerly Ivory Coast, remained under the strong influence of its former metropole. Pro-French president Félix Houphouët-Boigny ruled the country for 33 years, ensuring the interests of France.
Ce premier président là, leur rôle c'était de garantir les intérêts de la France dans les anciennes colonies françaises. Les richesses de la Côte d'Ivoire dans le sous-sol, partout, tout ce qui appartient à Côte d'Ivoire est d'abord la propriété de la France.
After the death of Houphouët-Boigny, a new leader, Laurent Gbagbo, came to power.
Lui, ses idées, c'est de travailler d'abord au profit des populations ivoiriennes et non au profit de la France. Or, dès que vous êtes touché un peu les intérêts de la France, c'est fini. Si vous ne défendez pas ses intérêts, on vous enlève vos pouvoirs.
France immediately deemed Gbagbo an enemy. A deep political crisis ensued, and Bouaké, the country's second largest city, turned into a theater of war.
C'est de là que tout est parti. Un coup d'État, le Grand Marché, les promoteurs du coup d'État ont replié vers le centre, donc Bouaké.
How did the dramatic events unfold? And how is Bouaké recovering from years of bloody conflict? Watch on RT.
And welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. George Samueli is a senior research fellow at the Global Policy Institute and the author of the book Bombs for Peace, NATO's Humanitarian War on Yugoslavia. And make sure if you reach out to him, you reach out to Samueli. Samuel, as I pronounced it earlier, he won't respond to you. That's his cousin. So thanks for joining us, George. So, look, you've written about NATO. You're an expert on NATO. I want to understand what NATO's thinking is when they create these narratives like this one that we're reporting on today, and they all come together and they always seem to have a cover story and they always protect each other. And I get it. Nations should come together and help each other and we should be unified. But when you do it as a group and you exclude other nations, then I don't think it's so positive. And that's what we seem to see more and more of. It's these, well, in high school, we called them cliques, right?
You're right. Now, the big lie at the heart of NATO is that it's a defensive alliance. It never was a defensive alliance. I mean, even from the very beginning, when it claimed that we are defending the West against the Warsaw Pact, it's helpful for most of the world not to know the most basic fact, which is that NATO was first. NATO was created in 1949. The Warsaw Pact didn't come into existence until 6 years later in 1955. So how could NATO be defending anyone from the Warsaw Pact? And then we have this phenomenon of essentially NATO waging one war after another. So it waged a war against Bosnia in 1995, then Yugoslavia 1999, then it's waged war against Libya 2011, it waged a war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and yet NATO continues to insist that it's defensive. Well, who's defending whom against what?
Exactly.
And
I'll give you a better example. I mean, I don't know if you caught this, but if you happen to see the, I think it was a 15-hour interview that Tucker Carlson did with Vladimir Putin. I think at the time, Mr. Putin says to him, and we knew this. I know guys like you and I probably know this, but some people didn't. Vladimir Putin said, we tried to convince the West to let us join NATO. We, Russia, if we're a part of it, then you don't have to be scared of us because we're all on the same team. He even went to them, went to the United States, I believe it was Condoleezza Rice, and said, look, why don't we come up with a nuke deal where we share nuclear armaments and use them against anybody who tries to attack either one of us? We'll have your back and you have our back. On both occasions, the West, the United States said, hell no. We don't want to be a join with you guys. We'd rather fight you. We'd rather be against you. That's stupid. I've used that word way too much today. Pardon me for doing it again, but your thoughts.
No, that history is absolutely correct. He did, Putin did offer Bill Clinton in 2000 to join NATO. Now, of course, when he did that, it made a lot of sense because he's essentially saying, look, we've had these security agreements. We had the Helsinki Final Act of 1975. We had the treaty, the Charter of Paris in 1990. The whole point of having these security frameworks is that everybody's in it and everybody feels secure. Everybody guarantees everybody else's borders. But if you create an alliance that excludes us, then obviously we see this alliance as being directed at us. And NATO has made no secret of the fact that it is directed at Russia. Yeah. And Russia regards Russia as the enemy, and it keeps incorporating one state after another, the states that border Russia, with a view to what? With a view, yeah, obviously, to insert Russia and eventually weakening and waging war against Russia. I mean, it's fairly obvious. Because if that wasn't the NATO project, then why did they say no to Russia, saying, okay, well, we would join just as we were part of the OSCE, we're part of the Helsinki Final Act.
And as aforementioned, Norway is looking like it's going to be the 51st state of the United States pretty soon with all the military bases that we seem to be putting there. I want to share something else with you. We're learning today that no less than 19 former U.S. military officials have sent an amicus brief, which is essentially like a friendly note of information they want the court to consider, to the Supreme Court of the United States regarding former President Donald Trump. Here's a headline for you. The headline where you can see how it says that giving Trump sweeping immunity would bring chaos, according to former U.S. generals, admirals, and military service leaders. What's it about? Well, it's about Mr. Trump asking for immunity from prosecution because he was, after all, the president of the United States. The former generals argue that if Mr. Trump gets immunity, U.S. troops stationed everywhere else will feel like if the president doesn't have to abide by the law, then why should we? The generals are telling the court that if it grants Mr. Trump's request for immunity, it will threaten to inject chaos into military operations. It also threatens to damage potentially irreparably the public's trust in the military. That's what they say. Okay, look, while that reasoning, George, seems like a bit of a reach. The overall message presented by these generals is correct. They're right. No one under any system of governance should be above the law. If you commit a crime, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're found guilty, you go to jail. That's just the way it is. There's no kings here, or should there be anywhere else, I think. So my problem with this brief isn't the message, it's the messengers. Former military officials become highly politicized in America, not to mention wealthy, when they leave office. I know the media puts them on these pedestals, but I'm not sure that their take on issues like this is really any more significant than that of any other citizen. In fact, I think it may even be less so. What do you think?
Well, I agree. I don't agree with you entirely in the first part of what you said, because I do think there is such a thing as sovereign immunity. I mean, it's a basic constitutional principle going back to the 17th century, which is the sovereign makes the laws, but the sovereign isn't bound by the law, because we know that sovereigns do things that we as ordinary citizens cannot do. I mean, we know presidents order assassinations, presidents order invasions, presidents order attacks on other countries. They don't get prosecuted because, you know, that they're acting as, you know, heads of state, as, you know, acting in their nation's interest. As private individuals, you cannot do those things, but as heads of state, that you can. So, but what they're doing here is, and everybody has always known this, and whenever anyone has gone to court to say, oh, I'm going to sue George W. Bush because he's waging an illegal war and so on, the courts have always thrown that out because
Correct.
They said, you know, whatever you may think of George W. Bush, he did it as president of the United States. He has immunity for doing it. But what these people are doing is they're saying, well, sovereign immunity is fine, except that you don't apply to Donald Trump. It's always the Trump factor. Yeah, this is, you know, every other president can do this, but except for Donald Trump.
Got your point.
So it's the same thing. Yeah, when taking Trump to bringing criminal charges because he kept his papers. Every president takes classified documents from the White House to his home. I mean, they write their memoirs. I mean, every president has done it.
Yeah.
No president has ever been prosecuted except for Trump.
Well, I wanted to give you a shot at that because I wanted to just not talk about geopolitics. I also wanted to include something else, but we're out of time, my friend. George Samueli, it is always a pleasure having a conversation with you. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Thank you very much, Rick. Always a pleasure.
Before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. Simple, really. We try to de-silo the world. Truths don't live in boxes. Neither do we. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact.